think we're ready to continue. What I'll do now is work through steps 2 and 3 and try to leave you some time for questions. Just on the first 3 steps, or at any time that you do have a question, just put your hand up, because I'm still doing a lot of fishing, and I want to make sure that you all are getting, you know, some type of a, not just a message, but some type of a little perking of the consciousness to know that there's more things to be done, there are more challenges to us. Also, I really want to express my recognition for the members of Al-Anon. Everything I say about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, of course, in dealing with the internalization of steps and the freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity, definitely applies every bit and as succinctly and as directly to the Al-Anon person, the Al-Ateen person, actually all people who are involved in 12-step groups, of which there's a plethora of 12-step groups going right now, dealing with all aspects of addiction. And the word addiction comes from the Latin word addicere, meaning to give ourselves over totally to. And that's what robs us of self-worth and robs us of the spiritual values in our life of freedom and of happiness. Serenity. And so that when we talk about addictions, we're talking about, when I talk about addictions, I'm talking about anything that is taken from the outside to change the way we feel. Right? Because what we're trying to work on is internalization of steps, a person's own self-worth, a person's own acceptance of themselves, but also surrender to those things which are blocking them from growth. And sometimes we use things, and those of us who are alcoholic, meaning that we were physically predisposed to the addiction of alcohol because of what alcohol elicited in us when it was ingested into the system, namely euphoria, and was at the beginning the total answer to all problems of life, that we certainly felt bigger than life itself, and that you know, the grandiosity and all of the factors which should be reduced were just magnified and got totally out of hand. And only when the addiction, which is a self-perpetuating dependency on one or more harmful drugs, we're talking about alcohol, when taken in toxic quantities. So there is a self-perpetuating dependency, which means tolerance. Not the right word, not the, medically speaking, tolerance means it means more, it takes more of the agent to arrive at the same euphoric state. And at the beginning of our alcoholism, that certainly was most evident. And it was also another way of proving our grandiosity, that we were able to handle greater quantities of alcohol, we're able to drink more. And growing up, what was the measure of virility and of masculinity and of machoism? And for the women, what was the measure of femininity and being fully alive was how much we could drink. And, you know, all that goes through our culture, right through all the games that we play in schools and things, and the drinking games and how much we can drink and all of those myths, you don't trust a person who can't drink, and all of that type of stuff that was always seen as something which was really mature, and it was the passageway from adolescence into adulthood was taken by how much we can drink and at the beginning we bought right into that. And because of the physical predisposition, we were able to, you know, outdrink everybody and anybody under the table, and everybody clapped their hands and said, "Boy, you ever mature, you can really handle your alcohol," because you were taking everybody home and putting them on the door sill and blowing them in, And you were the only person showing up the next morning at work while the rest of the people were dying. And you said, I thought we were going to go skiing. And they're like, oh my gosh, don't make so much noise. You're breaking my eardrums. So when we get again to the first step is, you know, what's our vision? What's our vision of ourselves? What's our vision of the world? What's our vision of God? What's our vision of the people in the world? You know? And is that vision negative or is that vision positive? You know, is our imagination about those things, and the imagination is the thing which is eventually going to make us do the actions, is it something negative? You know, one of the problems is that we find our kinship with humanity, with our brothers and sisters on the face of this earth, by proclamations of protestation, by negative statements, right? I mean, if I don't like this judge and you don't like this judge, well, the two of us band together and we can really pick on this judge, but now we got comradie and we got fellowship and we got ways of banding together with a negative vision of what's been done. And that, you know, is not really accepting, you know, what life is all about and what the gifts of life are about and how we are called to respond to that. So if we get through that first step again, just generally in your mind, looking at those two columns which we presented, you know, is it a negative response to life or is it a positive response? And after the years that I've been in the program, it doesn't mean that it stays that way all the time. You know, there's lots of times I wake up, I'm sure I'm way over here on the wrong side, right? But what we have to do is be able to recognize that and say, now how do I bring that to the conscious level to say that I'm not projecting it on somebody else, and I'm not blaming somebody else, and I'm not making excuses, but is what have I got to do to get out of that vision, to get out of that negative frame of mind, and to move over into the positive. And that's only brought about by action. If a person wants good, warm feelings about themselves in a positive, constructive way, that comes consequential to doing good, positive action. There's not one person here who was able to solve any problem, be it AA or Al-Anon, by just thinking about it. By just, you know, sitting on the bar stool and wondering all of the things that I could be doing here, you know, in a world of a secret life of Walter Mitty in total fantasy, nothing changes. And again, it means that we have to take the appropriate action, you know, of what the ego reduction is and start listening to what is being said to us and then start internalizing that and doing something about it. And so that when we look at the first step again, the positive, creative acceptance, surrender is a better word. So we're not just submitting ourselves to another regime and not submitting ourselves to something which we don't want to do, but we're going through the motions on the outside, but inside, little His Majesty the Baby or Her Majesty the Queen is still seeming with hostility, you know, and quite negative on the outside, saying all the right things. When we come, again, the action of that step, when total ego deflation, and then we have surrender, then we have humility, which means teachableness. The word humility, when we get into the seventh step, it means teachableness. I will allow myself to be taught. I will not sit at AA tables or Al-Anon tables and judge, or, you know, say, well, that's, you know, doesn't apply to me, or we start to all the comparing things. But how do we take it in and use it in a positive, constructive way? When we get down to the business of being egocentric, the business of being narcissistic, the business of being living in a world of one, and that's what narcissism was, as I described, now we get down to the second step, which means we came to believe in something other than ourselves. And we came to be able, again, in the past tense, it doesn't mean that we let's think about doing these things. But if I do these things, then something might happen. Life is not a contract where you're called upon to say, well, okay, if I give an ounce of love, I'm absolutely guaranteed to get an ounce back. You know, and unless I see that in small print, I'm not going to do it. Life doesn't work that way. There are so many people come to the fellowship saying, well, I'll try it for a while and see if I get these things out of it. But they sit back and not do the work which they have to do themselves. When we get to the second step, we're starting again now to talk about faith. And now everybody's going to start thinking religion. And that's, you know, not that I'm against religion. Oh, yeah, somebody asked me if I was still a practicing priest. Yes, I'm hired by the Archdiocese of Toronto to be with the street people, and I spend my 40 hours a week with the Brothers of Good Shepherd or doing other things for the people who are homeless. And on the weekends, I go to Elizabeth Ann Seton Parish in Newmarket and do all of the Eucharistic celebrations there and help Father Matt. And so the state's quite active in doing that. And there's many reasons why, you know, that I'm not contracted to do some of the other things, but it's all about a commitment, you know, to what really makes life meaningful. When we get into the second step, we're starting to talk about faith. And again, it's not a matter of magic, you know. Basically, what faith is a movement from the comfortable place to the uncomfortable place, always demanding risk. Again, no free lunch. So it's a movement. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, sell the house and go to Somalia tomorrow, right? That's not the movement I'm talking about. The movement I'm talking about is interior movement. You know, how do we move from negative to resentment? All right, resentment. Latin word meaning re-feeling an old hurt. Forgiveness. You know, we've all been hurt. We've been hurt by the people we love, right? We've been hurt by the institutions that brought us up and that we listened to and formed us. Be it church, be it school, be it education, parents, right? And certainly there's a great move today to heal the inner child, and I see nothing wrong with that as long as it remains a doorway to move on into something else, which means more interior work, which means more acceptance of self, which means more acceptance of others. Sometimes, you know, just the healing the inner child gets right back to where we get locked into the inner child. The inner child is still very omnipotent, God-like, right? All-powerful. The inner child is still very, very low on a tolerance to any type of frustration. And the inner child certainly still wants to do everything in a hurry. You know, if I was to sign up a pledge right now for everybody who wants to go to the moon, we would get all kinds of people who want to go to the moon. But the daily vicissitudes of living, the ups and downs, and handling those things and getting through, and with a plan, and not really too great. It's like, I want what I want when I want it. So it's great to know maybe where some of these hurts came from, and to live in the now. Very, very important that this is January the 22nd, 1994. This is what we've got. And this is where we live. And positive therapy with alcoholics, Al-Anon members, is action-oriented to the future and not to the past. We leave enough of the past open that could teach us that, hey, if we get back into those things, history is going to repeat itself for sure. If we're dealing with the chemical stuff, then we know that it gets progressively worse. You know that because we're all aging, our response to that is not the same, and addictions are not something which stay static, but demand a self-perpetuating increase of what we're using. So it's the appreciation of the now. So many people live on the hurts of the past. Like I was saying, a person who was saying to me, you can't understand what he did, it was just terrible. I'm saying, when did this happen? They said 1986. You know? And so many people live on the hurt of the past and continue to get their energy from that hurt, which is negative energy. And I know people who are still hurting from being dismissed from a certain position many, many years ago, and that's totally impeded them, or a broken relationship. Very hurtful, but not able to move on and to say, okay, this is the plate, this is what life put on my plate, how am I going to deal with it so that I can come out a freer person, a better person, a more loving person, or am I going to continue just to spend negative energy, trying to right the wrong that happened, last week, or it could be 5 or 6 years ago. So when we start talking about faith, it demands action first. Now, to say that I will believe this once you prove it to me, that is not faith. And you know that happens when your toaster's plugged in and there's power in the house and you put two pieces of bread in and you push the button down. You know that in, a minute and a half or something, pop, you're going to get two pieces of toast. That's not faith. But faith is, how am I willing to extend myself, right? To take the movement, right? Let's talk about resentment. Am I going to continue to allow that old hurt from X number of days, weeks, months, years ago to continue to darken the vision? To continue to be where I am spending energy, emotional energy. And so that, doesn't believe, when I'm talking about faith, I'm not talking about magic. I'm not talking about, if I say my prayers, God's going to come down and give me a new job. And I can make all kinds of fun about Al-Anon fluff, where you're working yet? No. Why? Well, the higher power hasn't given me a job. Well, how long have you been in AA? 18 years, And this goes on, that it's something supposed to, again, addiction, something supposed to happen from the outside to change the way I feel. Being a Catholic priest, I've got a lot of convictions, and I got a lot of, experiences in things in my own life. Okay, so when I look at, God's presence in the world, definitely there. God's presence in the world is in people, and I'll talk about that in the third step. But how God was revealed to us, was through Christ. Christ never performed one sign, one miracle, one anything for people who did not demonstrate their belief in Him in some way. In his own hometown, Bethlehem, where you think they would have gone gaga and at least put him on the Johnny Carson show or the David Letterman show or had a parade or done something. I mean, this guy is, turning... I always mix this up. It's five loaves and two fish. Yeah. I always go two fish and five loaves. It is two fish and five loaves. It's not five fish and two loaves. Anyway, whatever. And 5,000 people eat, right? People are cured. All that. And they knew about that. Historicity can prove that. Other than Josephus was a historian of the time. Other than being a religious writer, he was not. And writes about those things. But in his own hometown, he did nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because, they accepted him as being the carpenter's son. And that's it. And he was causing quite a stir. He was 12 years old and he was embarrassing all the rabbis. And the people were saying, who is this guy? They said, forget it. He's just some smart aleck kid. I know him. That's just Joseph's son and the son of Mary. What the heck? They never accepted him as being who he was. Right? So what did he do? Nothing. Because he knew that that was not going to enhance their faith, was not going to enhance their spiritual well-being whatsoever. In front of Herod, in front of Pilate, in front of the Sanhedrin, in front of all those authorities, institutional church, if you wish, right? Who kept saying to him, come on, wonder boy, do something. We're hearing all these stories. The dead are rising from the dead and the lame are getting up from their stretchers and the blind see and all of this is going on. Do something for us. We need a little sideshow here to rev up the peace. He did nothing. He said, well, you're king. You say I'm king. My kingdom's not of this world. Right? And what did he do for them? Nothing. When his own life depended upon it, nothing. Nothing. Don't you know that I have the power to kill you? Right? You can't kill me. You know? And nor did he ever strike back. When they did kill him, he never struck back. When someone is doing things that are not pleasant to us, someone is doing those types of things, and whatever it may be, whatever, and we strike back, we then become their problem, right? And Jesus said, you can kill me. I'm not going to strike back. Because if I strike back, then I become your problem. I am not your problem. You're your problem. But if I strike back at you, then I get you off that hook, right? And I alleviate you from the work which you have to do. In those cases where people demonstrated their need for him, and he did miraculous things. You know, pick up your stretcher and walk, your faith is healed. And you can read in all the scriptures, and it'll always say that. In the synoptic gospels anyway, of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, not in John. But it's always pick up your faith and heal you, open your eyes and see, you're cured from blindness, da-da-da-da-da. The centurion who brings his servant, the same thing, my servant's sick, my daughter's sick, by the time you get home, they'll be well. Your faith is healed you. I have not seen this much faith in all the people of Judea, and on and on and on. The woman who was hemorrhaging for all those years, boom, touched the garment, boom, that type of stuff. So what I'm talking about here it is, January the 22nd, 1994, right? And we're on a spiritual journey, for that is what AA is. It's a spiritual journey in relationship to other people and in relationship to our power, our higher power, whatever that might be for the person, right? And you know, if we want the faith to be real, then it requires movement. It requires movement when I'm talking psychologically now, or I'm talking at the feeling level. I'm talking about when we start looking at the two columns of that first, of the first step. The action of that first step is found in the second step. And so the action of those two columns is, what do I do about it? If I'm still holding some resentments about an incident that happened against an individual, whatever amount of time ago it was, doesn't make any difference. But if I want to grow out of that and move from this column into this column, then it's up to me to do the appropriate action. And maybe that means forgiveness. Maybe that means practicing some real humility. All of life really is like go back to Christ. All of Christ's life is just a life of forgiveness. Did not judge people at all. But when I look at it myself and I'm saying, okay, so it's the 22nd of January, 1994. If I'm expected, you know, to continue to grow in enthusiasm, right, and in joy, and to make life something more meaningful than just getting through another day, right? How are you?
Getting through another day.
All right, we got all the gifts in the world to live enthusiastically, you know, and positively. I'm just getting through another day, right? I have other statements that I can make for that. So that's where it's at. And it's up to me to do it. The minute we make somebody else, even God, the supplier of all our needs, even when we load up a relationship so that other person becomes the total cause of all our happiness, we become demons. Basic evil. And certainly, as alcoholics, we are pretty good at manipulating. And certainly, if we don't move out of the ego deflation, and we're still working on our omnipotent little His Majesty the baby, demanding things out of life, and demanding things or people in life to supply our needs, we can start using people, and even though we're not using alcohol. And so we get into all of the types of different transferences, if you wish, right? And certainly then it is not, our relationship with people then is not an extension of ourself and of our energies for the good of the other person. It's again, what's out there to fulfill me, 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 me. And the whole selfishness, page 62, we alcoholics must rid ourselves of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Dealing with that first character I was talking about, you know, and I'm saying to him, the spiritual awakening comes as the result of these steps. It doesn't say as a result of these steps. It says the, T-H-E, that's a big word. What does it mean? It doesn't say as a, if it means, okay. Oh, I hate this, I put my glasses on. It's humiliating for me to put these glasses on because once I put them on when I was doing a wedding and the person said to me, oh, Father, now I know just who you look alike. Are you look alike a George? George Bird is 97 years old, right? So, you see a little Italian lady with a black eye, you know. Awakening as the result of these steps. It doesn't say as a result. As a result would be a one-time, world-shattering, bone-crushing, you know, ecstatic, euphoric, you know, big deal, the big bang of 15 billion years ago, and all the lights would go on, boom, and Angel Gabriel would come down. It doesn't say that. It says as the. And the word the means continuous action must be taken. The continuous action must be taken. Now, I've been around long enough, thanks to the program, where I get into all kinds of situations of, well, as long as you're comfortable, let it all hang out. And they read the fifth chapter, how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who does whatever the heck they want with this program. They take into consideration all those things which will be enjoyable, fun, pleasurable, and meaningful for them, and of course cast aside anything which might demand a little sacrifice, discipline, or order. They're sure to get well. It doesn't say that yet, right? It says that actions must be taken. Page 62, we alcoholics must rid our selfishness, must rid ourselves of this selfishness, we must or it kills us. How could we escape these resentments? We saw that these resentments must be mastered. But how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided we do not bring greater harm to other people. Oh, I hate this one. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect it to live long and happy lives. We must be honest. The Catholics are going to love this one. I can just see this. Those of us belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must, and of course we'll want to go to the properly appointed authority. The rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. And when we can't find somebody to take our fifth step with, we don't change our plans, and we must not use this as a mere excuse to postpone. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go. And we must not shrink at anything. Certainly, we must keep sober. Now, I know people come out of therapy and say, well, Valium's not alcohol. Eat all those. We must take the lead for a period of construction. And we must remember that 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. We can't expect the rest of the world to change immediately just because we have. On page 85, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. These thoughts must go with us constantly, and we must further that. But we must go further, and that means more action. We must be careful not to drift into worry, anger, or self-pity. Dealing with other people, this is an experience we must not miss. To be a vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfishness, constructive action. If the person is to find God, he must decide for himself or herself whether he wants to go on. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. How many am I at? 27. Between page 58 and 103, it's there 27 times. So when I hear this, well, I'll let it all hang out. I mean, what, the higher power says it's okay, and just enjoy it. That's not what this book is about. It's about, you know, how do we really get at the freedom? And so when we talk about, you know, faith, coming to believe in something outside of ourselves, sure, it can start with the group, for sure. It can start meaning that we have to start dissolving the walls which isolate ourselves. You know, and that certainly is a predominant thing of being walled off. Of being walled off, and you know, certainly it came out in some of the things you were saying with that first column, being isolated, not belonging, you know, and that was one of the great experiences that we had coming into AA. We finally found a place where we belong. You know, we finally found a home. The concept of home is not the house we grew up in. The concept of home is not the nationality we grew up in, Canadian or American or Italian or French. No. The concept of home is not a country. The concept of home is not brick and mortar. It's not a house. It's none of those things. Home is that very special place where people who love you take you and take away the strangeness you feel at being who you are. A special place where people take you, who love you, and take away the strangeness you feel at being who you are. Now, in my experience, there is nothing that compares to that like AA does. And I've lived, you know, 30 years in religious communities. And I know all about rectories and religious communities, right? But that, you know, and that just doesn't happen automatically, too. There's more steps that will help us get on into that as we continue to dissolve walls and become vulnerable and become transparent. But the faith part is, who's doing the action? You know, if I'm not doing the action, nothing's going to happen. If I expect the group to do the action, or my family to do the action, or somebody else to do the action, or I'm going to go take another course, get it all up here, and I gotta go find something about codependency, and I gotta find something about adult children of alcoholics, and I gotta go through all that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with any of those things, but as long as it's not just mental gymnastics, no, that's not where we live life. And so when we say, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, means to a reasonable way of living. What insanity was in these words by Bill Wilson was the person who had experienced some longevity in being alcohol-free, then picked up a drink. That, in his words, was insanity. You know, we certainly see it happening, Well, we don't make any judgments on that. All we know is that that the external stuff is all very good, but what's going on inside, the stuff that I was dealing with was step one, about total ego reduction, about total powerlessness, about total defeat, about total giving up, is not there. It hasn't gotten to the unconscious level where the action is appropriate and correlative to what is going on. We can be saying all the right things on the inside, but inside steaming with hostility. And then, you know, we're again caught in the dichotomy of a dual life. I mean, I've listened to thousands, and of course, being in the field and a priest and a counselor in it, you know, where there wasn't a dry eye in the AA meeting, and it was the best talk anybody had ever heard, and it was really great. But talking to the family is totally a different story. You know, I'm just saying that, you know, that's not what the program is talking about. We're talking about wholeness, integration, credibility on the what the program should be bringing and what we should be bringing to the program. So that gets to step two. Doesn't mean, you know, saying a Hail Mary and expecting everything to change, right? Some of us could get into that magic again, you know? And I'm not saying that certainly it is very good to unite with people and to say thank you in the Eucharistic way, which means to say thanks, and all those different types of things we kind of extending ourselves. But it does mean that I have to get out of myself. The second step means getting out of oneself. It doesn't mean turning it over to somebody else, like you hear this all the time, I've been in the driver's seat too long. I'm going to turn it over to God, let Him drive. You're going to have an accident. God gives us the road map, right? The program gives us the road map. I mean, how many people have the same road map that we have, plus 2 million people to talk it over with and to laugh about it and cry about it and celebrate it and do all these things? Every night of the week, in the daytime, the morning, whatever. And yet, get the people to look at these 45 steps, it just doesn't happen. And so it's not a matter of abandonment, I give up. It's not giving up, right? But it's accepting the reality of what I've got to be doing if I want to get some quality sobriety. Not a matter of just stopping to drink. There's different ways we can do that. We can sow energies into your system so that it'll be time released, you know, every hour on the hour for the next 50 years, right? And then if you drink, you'll solve your drinking problem quickly. But that's not freedom. That's not growth. That's not accepting oneself for what it is. Then we get in. So the second step, again, is not magic, but it's what am I willing to do? What am I willing to look at and say, how am I going to give up the resentment? How am I going to give up the anger? How am I going to give up the fear? How am I going to take risks? Right? How am I going to stretch? There's many, many ways we can do that. Many ways. And how, you know, do I make this world a better place to live in? I mean, the world is just a garden. When I go through the garden, is the garden going to be in better shape when I leave or not? And that's nobody else's responsibility. That's not the government's responsibility. That's not all the junk you hear on TV. You know, and another statement I'll say is, we befriend evil much, much easier than we befriend goodness. No, total, as a Catholic priest, of course, total goodness came on the face of this earth with our Lord, God's Son, Jesus Christ, and we killed Him. Bang. Church and state killed Him. And we continued to do that, and we continued to do that in ourselves. Just think of some of the meetings you go to. And people are just identifying with the bad in them. Right? And if you watch TV, what? I'm on tape, I gotta watch it. What is the biggest news event that is going across Canada and the United States? Shock! The second one is that horrible thing with Chad happened to the fancy, but bang her knee in the, yeah. I mean, this is what's got the whole, you know, billions of dollars in news. You know how much a news media bureau costs, a news team and a TV? Billions. And we're focused in on, and we're not seeing any of the good things that are going on. This poor guy. So, I'm just saying, that's where we befriend. And every time you turn the news or look at the newspaper, what's the headlines going to be? And now just get it down to our own state. Get down to AA meetings, Al-Anon meetings. When we come in, what's the thing we talk? Negative. No, I've never heard anybody sit down at a table and say, I am beautiful. You know? But you are. And now we get to turn it over to God. Whatever God means to you. Right? And remember the words here 47 times. Right? And I don't want to get into, you know, Catholicity or any denominationalism, but what we have to do is accept creaturehood, and we will never accept creaturehood until we've gone through a fifth step. But what we have to do is accept creaturehood. Creaturehood means intuitively that I accept a creator other than me. Until I do that, I can never accept forgiveness. Until I do that, I'll mouse things, I'll go through things, I'll go to a different institute like I did, I'll get all these degrees, I can talk metaphysical definitions of God, he whose essence is his existence, and we can go on with all of the quinque, ba, sancte, pome, and up. Mental gymnastics. Right? And now it comes to the third step, which means made a decision. Again, past tense. It doesn't say, think about taking into consideration an option which you could probably make in the future if the heat gets bad enough. If the job's ready to fire you and the wife's ready to leave and the kids, maybe under those circumstances it would seem appropriate that you take this. No, it doesn't say that. It says, past tense, made a decision. Unless I make that decision, it's not going to mean anything. What's the decision? Does God want me drunk? No. Does my Creator want me drunk? No. Do I reflect back the beauty of His creative work by being intoxicated? Blitzed out of my mind? No. Do I answer all those things which I'm called to be as a human being? And to live those as enthusiastically as possible when I'm smashed out of my mind? No. Right reason says, doesn't want me drunk. Therefore, what's the type of decisions have I got to make? Well, there's an AA group I belong to. That AA group meets on Tuesday night. That's my decision. That's okay. That's where I'm going to be. If it's an Al-Anon group, I'm going to be there. That's a priority. We've got to make choices in life. That's what life is to make choices. No? The stories of John Chilton about Lucy and all those, about, you know, who gets the choices? And she's looking at him and saying, he's got a snowball in his hand. And Lucy says, if you throw that snowball, I'll pound you into the ground. But if you don't throw it, I'll set you free. And he goes, that's it. Life's choices, but I never get any, right? That's not what I'm talking about. So what we're talking about, okay, those are the decisions I make. To turn my life over to the care of God, what that means is not abandoning your will. You have a free will. There are certain things which God cannot do. God cannot change. Change is a sign of imperfection. To change means that something wasn't as perfect as it should have been, so it changed the future. God creates you with a free will. He cannot tamper with that. He gives you all kinds of invitations if you wish, all kinds of support, all kinds of gifts. Program. And you're given an invitation. But the response to that is yours. Like, God cannot make apples taste like oranges. That's a monstrosity. That would make God into a monster, because that's a change of the natural law. Right? Now, God, you know, a lot of us load up God with all of the needs of our life, and God becomes our need supplier. That is not it at all. Creator, we are the creatures. And in that role, we're called to serve. But sometimes we say, well, I asked God and he didn't answer. No? I want a new Mercedes, but he didn't answer. He does, he don't. I don't remember this guy, but I want to be a doctor. I want to be a doctor. You know what God said?
Go to medical school.
That's it. And a lot of us have been brought up, and so we're going to continue to go through adult life blaming the hurts of the past. We'll say, well, that's what God means to me. Get it, Grim. No, and if we can find something to blame our behavior on, that's neat. Especially if we can pick on big institutions, you know, United Nations Church or whatever, right? Now, get down to the reality of it all. Again, how do we find these things out? And again, as a Catholic priest, I got to go through, you know, where I find these things out and how I incorporate them into the steps with no magic, right? So Christ came on the face of this earth and he says, I'm not going to be here forever. I need some followers, some apostles. So he starts picking out 12 people. And he picks out people just like you and I. The dope addicts, the drunks, a couple of hookers were thrown in there, and that scandalizes the hell out of everybody. No, a very spiritual man. I know every day I met the brothers, and like yesterday we fed 200 at noon and 300 at 3:30. At 3:30, I was feeding 300 people, and I'm around there. And this very spiritual man said to me, Father, are you ever jealous? I said, what do you mean, jealous? He said, jealous of what? He said, of these guys. I said, why? He said, I got to heaven before you. So, you know, that's what God picked. You know? He didn't go and get the highest politician he could find. It's what Jesus didn't go say, oh, who's the most powerful politician? And who's the most powerful industrialist? And we're going to have to build, so I'm going to need some carpenters. I'm going to need some engineers. And I'm going to need some rich people. Let's go. He picked people just like you and I. And they started following him. Why? For their own personal needs. Each one of them had a private agenda. Each one of them was after one of the things that we have to handle in all of our lives, power. We want power. And they were looking at this path, going, holy kadoodle, look at that. First of all, there was just water in these jugs. Now there's wine. Now believe me, if somebody had did that X number of years ago in your life, wouldn't you follow him too? Please, all the water in the world, free food for the rest of our lives, this is power. They wanted political power. And what was happening? God, they followed him, right? And they said, when this cat takes over the kingdom of Rome, we are going to be the first lieutenant. You know, Peter was a drunk, for sure. You know, big frog adults, you'll be, yeah, and I'll be the first pope. I'll have a white chariot, hot dog, boy. That's totally awesome. And so they were fighting all the time. Mothers were running them, saying, when you get to heaven, make sure to my feet aren't 50 times. You know? Like, I've been coaching a lot of hockey, you know. And the kids aren't the problem, the parents. How come my little boy's not playing hockey? Right? Because he has taste. But they were doing the same thing. Well, I went first place. He's going to be first place. He's going to have the power. He's going to have a king. But we're with you, Lord. Lord says to them, look, guys, I've been with you 3 years. You ain't getting the picture. But pretty soon I'm going to get strung up. What?
You son of that, never! Anybody lays a hand on you, I'll liquidate him.
Well, I'm Peter. I'm the first pope. I'll cut the pastor's ear off, right?
Scratch that off the tape.
Actually, I'm doing really well. Dark Archer looked at him and said, you don't understand. You just don't understand.
Don't worry, Peter, you and your big mouth. Before the cock crows, you're going to walk out on me and say, me? What? Deny you? Never in my life. We all know the story, you know? The fulfillment of everything that had been written about for 4,000 years in the Old Testament, right? His feet came. He was betrayed. All these guys who are waving the banner and following him, yeah, I'm an AA, yes sirree, I'm an AA, okay, let's go, Al-Anon, fine, where'd they all go? It appeared. Right? All except one. The 18-year-old. And to this day, you always hear, oh, are you, oh my God, are you really bad? Right? The only one who stayed, John. And you know what happened? Jesus died. And I'll talk about that because that's got very much to do with what's going on in our lives. But anyway, what did they do? They boogied out of there and went and hid. And they went up into the second floor and they said, oh, wow, have we ever been sucked in? Look what they've done to our boss, huh? And if they ever catch up, decapitation. So in total fear, or step, what is it? Fear. Total fear. Did nothing. And he walked in. And he didn't do what I would have done. Because if it was me, in my unredeemed eight in the Enneagram, it would have been, where the heck were you guys Friday at 3 o'clock? And throw more guilt on them. You know, it's not the lashes they give us in prison, it's the salt people keep throwing in over and over and over, right? There's that wife telling her husband, no, what was this? Oh, yeah. If you weren't an alcoholic, George would have straight. George is a 16-year-old son. I tell him, he hasn't had a drink for 16 years. But anyway, she's throwing guilt at him, right? Doesn't say that. All he said was, shalom, peace, I love you, and I understand. But we can't accept that. We're going to go out beating ourselves in the guilt. You know? I know this, 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 I know this. And what happens is we start identifying with evil much closer than, you know, being able to accept the good. Just look at our news media. If any of you have had any experience with the youth get involved in Satanism, I have, you know, and that's what it is. It's a total giving over to what is evil. What God says to you today on January the 22nd, 1994 is shalom, peace, I love you, I understand. Or you wouldn't be, first of all, you wouldn't be living, and before you wouldn't be living, you wouldn't be sold. That's the gift. And it might take a lifetime, most probably, to figure what the gift does. All the implications. You know, why, how'd you get to AA? We start blaming people, and that type of stuff. And I'll blame, you know, Father Cruz, you know. Not, that's just the little tools I use. But what he's saying is, you know, and until we can come to grips with that, whatever our religious denomination is, whatever our background is, whatever any of that is, until we can come to grips with the contact with the first love, we are incapable of creating community. We are incapable of creating marriages.
We are incapable of being in relationship with anybody. We are incapable of making a commitment to anything. Because we're still locked in ourselves. And it is still the walled off, feeling apart. And what we have to do, all of us, is take all of our religious backgrounds, and yeah, maybe we're going to have to discard some of the stuff that we were, you know, because what spirituality means is you don't go around quoting everybody. Father Quinn said, or Henry Nouwen said, or Thomas Merton said, or Jesus said, or Mahatma Gandhi said, or somebody else. No. You have to stop all that, and every one of you have to come to a grip and say, what is your spirituality? Yeah, all those things are influential. All those things have truth in them. All those things have values in them. Am I taking those things and internalizing them so that they become something positive in my life so I can extend myself for other people? Or am I going to continue to use them as an excuse of why I am damaged? Dysfunctional. Even in words, dysfunctional. I'm dysfunctional because of the codependent hierarchy. Again, the game is not accepting the reality of life. The reality of life is that I'm alive. I'm kept alive, you know, by the Creator. I'm put on this life to reflect back the beauty of His creation. Now, can I walk and make sure, you know, in developing that solidarity that God is within me? Again, my references are, you know, you make your home in me, I make my home in you. Not in just doing things, yeah, there's opportunities we have in practicing certain things, you know, as a strengthening and as demonstrations of our belief and all that type of stuff. But you've got to come in touch with the first love in your own gut. No other way. Nobody's going to put it there for you. Nobody's going to do it. Right? And you have to look at that and say, where am I with that? And that's going to remind you to require faith because it's going to demand risk. I mean, you're going to have to get rid of all of the props. All of the crutches, all of the others. It's January the 22nd, 1994, and here I am, where am I? What is this relationship? Is it a love relationship? Like, there's no other way to come to God. You can go to school from now till doomsday without falling in love with Him. So what am I going to get back? There we go. See? You know, I know what I'm talking about because I go through this all the time. You know, I'm not getting something out of a book. Yeah, it's a priest. Sure. Well, what am I going to get out of it? We are all very obedient. Selectively obedient. Look at number one. But you have to come in touch with this because what God is saying is, I love you because I love you because I love you because I love you because I love you. Why? Because I love you. Why? Imagine, isn't it? Because I love you. What? Because I love you. Wish you didn't, then I wouldn't have to respond. Right? No more magic. No hope in hope. Don't turn my will over to God. The house is fire. You call the fire upon. No, I have God. We just, you know, and so that's where it's at. And once you are able to do that, you know, and that means continual action. It doesn't mean that you're going to get it this afternoon at 2 o'clock and then boom, it's finished. No. Then you're able to see God in other people. Then you'll realize you're chosen. And when you can accept the fact that you're chosen, then you are accepting the fact that other people are chosen also. But we were brought up in our competitive world, and I know that more than anybody as a goaltender. When I was chosen, other people weren't. And my gig was to make sure I was chosen. And other people didn't make the team. That's not what I'm talking about now.
It's the fact, if I can accept the fact that I'm chosen, that means other people of other race, of other skin color, of other religious denominations, of other creeds, of other Buddhists, Muhammad, makes no difference, are every bit as chosen as I am. Then I don't have to be in competition. The spiritual life is not a world of competition. The spiritual life is a world of fruitfulness. And as alcoholics, we get pretty immature about all of this stuff. We want to come off looking number. We think that all these trophies that we have around ourselves, which distinguish us from other people, is what's going to count. And it's what's going to make life meaningful. It's going to give me the capacity to love, extend myself to the spiritual value of somebody else. Even though they don't even think the way I do, though nothing, values aren't the same, anything. But that's the challenge. The challenge is not just giving lip service, but saying, how do I, you know, walk in life, you know, and take the time to develop that solidarity with my Creator, and how that Creator reveals himself to me, and how I internalize that the home for that is in here, so that I am able then to accept other people. If I can't do that, I'm just fighting all the time. Gotta get this, gotta get that, gotta get this, gotta make this, gotta get here, gotta get there, gotta move. And when you die, you die. When you're dead, you're dead. One of the most profound statements that Billy Graham ever said was, you never see a U-Haul behind others. And what are we fighting for in life? Things. Right? Gotta have this, gotta have that. All things from the outside. Change the way I feel. When you're dead, you're dead. What? That's gonna be the biggest gift you ever given in your whole existence. Now, what's that gift gonna be? The greatest gift you're ever gonna get is when you, you know, go. How do you want to go? With a U-Haul full of junk? I'm sure he's not going to say anything except, where are your friends? Again, at the Last Supper, it's wash people's feet. And I'm sure when we get to the pearly gates, he's going to say, whose feet did you wash? Now there's no place in the world that we get an opportunity to do that like in the fellowship of AA and Alabama. But again, it's a lot. And we'll keep talking about that, because all we talked about was the first three steps. Now, the rest will tell us some of the ways that we have to work at becoming vulnerable, at becoming transparent, and, you know, becoming in a lifestyle that demonstrates those things that you've been talking about. So it's now 8 minutes after 12, and we break for, you said, what, an hour and 15, Ron? So 10 minutes after 1. And what's 15? 1:45. I got it. I gotta keep the old watch.